Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back into the Fantasy Pros Fantasy Football Podcast. If this is your first time here, I'm Mike Tagliere, filling the host seat while our usual host, Bobby Sylvester, is on a cruise somewhere. If this is not your first time here, well, Bobby's not here, and you know that I'm bound to screw something up. We've got a packed show for you guys today, filled with Super Bowl thoughts, as well as the start of our NFL draft coverage. But first, I have an announcement. Thanks to all of the support you guys have shown on us this year on the podcast, we have a new sponsor, and one that you should be really happy about. Why should you be happy? Because we're giving away a full-size, signed Le'Veon Bell helmet. SportsIntegrity.com has been in the sports memorabilia industry for 17 years now, providing fans with certified, authentic signatures. Their items come from contracted signings. If you're a Patriots or an Eagles fan, they have a vast variety of Super Bowl 52 autographed merchandise. Head over to SportsIntegrity.com to see their full inventory right now. Now, in order to win the signed Le'Veon Bell helmet, all you have to do is go to iTunes, subscribe to this podcast, rate, and leave a review. All you do is you screenshot that review, email it to contest@fantasypros.com. That's it. The best part is that once you do that, you're going to automatically be entered to win future contests. If you were here last year, you know that we gave away tons of signed merchandise, including an Odell Beckham Jr. and Antonio Brown signed jersey. So pause this right now. Go leave a review, help us out, and come back. All right, so the last time that we recorded a podcast, the Super Bowl had not yet been played, so we obviously need to cover that. But first, let me bring in the guest for our show. With the NFL draft right around the corner, we'll be bringing in analysts who dissect these prospects in depth. You may have seen his name popping up around the Twitterverse, as he's been very well respected in the NFL draft community. He's an analyst for PFF and a writer for DLF, and his name is Elliot Crist. Welcome to the show, Elliot. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm excited to check out your sponsor after the podcast because, you know, the thing I collect is sports memorabilia. I have 24 of the 32 teams NFL helmets signed by one of the best players in their franchise history. And all the things that hang up on my wall are all signed different things. I'm looking at Walter Payton and Barry Sanders right now. So I know what I'm doing as soon as this podcast ends.
Damn, I'm really jealous right now because, like, legitimately, I've started a collection. I have Le'Veon Bell. I got Julio back here. I got Jerry Rice. I only have 7 of the 32 teams, and I'm doing the exact same thing, grabbing, like, a Hall of Famer or one of their good players right now. Unfortunately, one of the helmets that I did get was a Sammy Watkins Bills helmet, so I'm pretty sure I could just throw that in the trash.
I got a Sammy Watkins Bills jersey the day before he got traded. That was, like, one of my new Bills purchases, signed jersey, and I was all excited, and then It came in the mail, and I got a tweet like 5 minutes later that he was traded, and I was like, oh.
I think we both need to go and buy some Andre Reed stuff. I think that's where, or Don Beebe, maybe we should do that.
I have I have the Bills helmet, and it's signed by Bruce Smith, Marv Levy, Jim Kelly, and Andre Reed. So I got some Bills stuff there.
Nice. Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, being with the Bills right there, you have a Super Bowl under their belt. How was the Super Bowl for you? I know it seems like you're kind of like me, because I obviously follow you on Twitter, and you were saying that it's a day that you kind of walk away from Twitter, you walk away from being a fantasy analyst or a draft analyst, and you just want to be a fan for the day, hang out with your friends. I mean, did you enjoy the day?
I did. You know, as a Jets fan, Super Bowls have been really painful for me, because it's just, you know, the Giants or the Patriots win the Super Bowl. And then that's why I was so excited when Peyton Manning was in there against the Seahawks or Cam Newton. And it was just different. So this one, I went to school in Philadelphia, and all my friends are Eagles fans, and they love to rub that in my face, how much better the Eagles are than the Jets. And then the biggest rivals are the Patriots. So I said, you know what? I'm not going to have any money on the game. I'm not going to play DraftKings contests. I'm not going to do the player props or any of that stuff. I'm not going to stress out about it. I'm just going to relax, have some friends over, made some food, had a couple beers, and just legitimately sat back and enjoyed being a fan, which was a really nice change of pace.
It really is. And that's, so it's funny. Like, so with the Super Bowl, you figure it's like a time to get everybody together. And usually me and my friends do somewhere. But my son's birthday was 2 weeks ago. So I hosted his first birthday party and the Super Bowl, like, kind of together. So it was really fun. I had like a house full of like 40 people. And I think 20 stuck around to watch the game. So it was a good time. But did you know, Elliot, that there was 1,151 total yards in that game, offensive yards, mind you. That was the most in any game ever. Like, not just the Super Bowl or playoffs, any game all time. Did you know that?
No, I did not realize that.
It was insane. It was like watching a college game, like a Big 12 game or something like that. It was a whole lot of fun. I mean, obviously seeing Rocky go down, or the Russian go down to Rocky, that was just, it was crazy. But I don't know if I want to take anything away from this. I don't want to get into the whole Brady best of all time conversation. We've been there. We've done that. Everybody's been there. But I think the storyline from this game that I really want to walk away from is that Doug Peterson kind of gave coaches a blueprint as to what you should be doing when you're playing a powerhouse like the Patriots. They didn't take their foot off the gas. He had ballsy play calling the entire game. I mean, even in the fourth quarter, you go down and they're in their own territory. He's going it on fourth down. Like, he didn't even think about it. When they called that timeout, I was positive that they were at least going to consider it, but you could tell he was dead set the entire time to be aggressive. It all paid off. I mean, it was kudos to them. It was the opposite of what we saw the Jaguars do, you know, a couple weeks before.
The Jaguars drove me nuts, man. You could tell what the coaching staff thought of Blake Bortles when they kneeled the ball with 55 seconds to go on the 25-yard line. Like, you need to try to get more points, and the Eagles did that. And, you know, Doug Peterson had great schemes all year, and one of the things he really did was the Eagles ran more RPOs than any other team in the NFL, and the Patriots could not stop them. You know, they got the defense spread out on all different levels and was able to attack them and create easy reads for Nick Foles, and he's talented enough to do that. And, you know, it was one of those situations where we saw a lot of college concepts in the NFL. And it was really interesting when you watched the game, because you talked about all the yardage. The Patriots were on pace to be the NFL's worst defense through the first six weeks of the season.
Yep.
So that kind of came to light all over again. And the Eagles secondary was a secondary that you could attack with good offensive weapons throughout the course of the season. And it kind of just all clashed at once. And you saw this shootout and just one hell of a game.
It was a game for the ages. It's a game that, like, you just didn't want to end. You just wanted it to keep going. It was fun. And like I said, I don't want to get into the whole debate, but we just wanted to touch on the game. I'm sure you've seen countless things on TV. It's been rehashed. We get it. So we want to move on. I do want to mention the debacle that took place with the Colts yesterday, though, because if you somehow missed this, Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels and the Colts had agreed to terms on a contract for him to become the next head coach. But due to the NFL rules, they couldn't announce it officially until after his team was done playing in the playoffs. Well, the Colts announced on Tuesday that they'd hold a press conference to introduce McDaniels as the head coach on Wednesday, that it was official. Just a few hours later, reports came out said that McDaniels isn't going to take the job, leaving them high and dry, as all other coaching vacancies have been filled. So they're kind of left with the scraps here. You can argue that they should have moved faster in the process, But let's talk about for a second, like, why did this happen? Elliot, do you have a take on this as to why McDaniels maybe went back to New England? Do you think this is a Bill Belichick potentially leaving after a season, maybe this offseason? Do you think it has to do with Andrew Luck? Like, what do you think? Why do you think Josh McDaniels did this?
I think those have to be one of the two reasons, right? Either because there is reports before the Super Bowl that it could be Tom Brady or Bill Belichick's last Super Bowl. And if there are, if the Brady retirement is legitimate and Gronk retirement is legitimate, Bill might say, you know what, I have made my run. I'm at peace with the way my career went, and I'm ready to move on. And Josh McDaniels wants to step in his shoes and take that job. The other aspect of it is Andrew Luck's shoulder is a lot worse than we expect. I mean, he's still not throwing footballs. There's talk he has to have another shoulder surgery. And I think the reason McDaniels took the job is because he wanted to work with Luck and thought of what, you know, the potential for that offense could be. And if that's gone, then that becomes one of the worst jobs, if not the worst job in the NFL. So he might have said, you know what, Andrew Luck's shoulder is not what I was told, and this is not something I want to be a part of anymore. Now, my biggest issue with it is that he thought of it selfishly, and there are a lot of assistants that are, you know, on the line, and their jobs and livelihoods are on the line, and he kind of just threw that all away for what was best for him, despite asking them to make commitments to be a part of his staff. So that's the issue I have with it.
Well, it's kind of like the same thing with the Patriots, though. And this is where I'm torn on the whole thing. And is Belichick leaving now? Because then McDaniels would obviously inherit Tom Brady. Because if it's a year later, let's be realistic here. Tom Brady may play his last year in 2018. That's a legitimate possibility. And then if Belichick's gone, Brady's gone, what does this team have that you can build around? It's got a solid offensive line. The defense we obviously saw get shredded by Nick Foles. They didn't have a pass rush. Their secondary was weak. They're going to lose some players in free agency. It's just, I feel like this is not a good foundation to follow up in. And if you don't have Tom Brady, it's basically the same thing with the Colts without Andrew Luck. Not saying that the Colts have any pieces, you know, outside of Luck, because if Luck is hurt, like really hurt, and he does need another shoulder surgery, that's the end of that franchise, essentially. Like, you might as well hire Jeff Fisher, you know, Hugh Jackson to go 0-16, because there's just not enough talent in the roster. So it's really interesting, and I just don't know how to feel about it. I can't see Belichick just walking away. There's confirming reports saying that he's going to stick around. So we'll see as the offseason plays off. But we did feel like it was something that you guys should know as listeners. But now that we've covered what happened since our last podcast, it's time to introduce our NFL draft coverage. Over the next 2 months, we'll be dissecting each position in the draft and how it should affect your approach in fantasy football. Today, we're going to be discussing one of the most important positions for fantasy football, and that is the running back position. Rather than talk to you just about a few players, we're going to be discussing the running back landscape and tiers in this episode with Elliot. And then as we lead up to the, you know, the combine and then the draft, we're going to hit on these players more in depth. But today is to give you a landscape of the running backs that are in the draft and guys that you really need to pay attention to that should be on your fantasy football radar, even in redraft leagues. So let's start right at the top. I think everyone and their mother knows who Saquon Barkley is. And if for some reason you don't, you should know that he's going to be a top 2 round pick in fantasy drafts this his rookie year. I don't think it really matters what team he goes to. Even if the Browns take him at 4, I do believe that Saquon Barkley will be a first or a second round pick in redraft formats. Some have dubbed him the best prospect since Adrian Peterson, but we hear that about running backs almost every year. So, Elliot, let's talk about Barkley for a minute. Is there anything that you can see with Barkley with your eyes that might be a little concern? And I'm not going to sit here and pretend that there's going to be a massive concern that you're going to like shock everyone with, but is there anything that you see in his game that may be a little worrisome?
So the two things that come up with Barkley are that, one, sometimes he dances around the line of scrimmage, that there's a play to be made to have 3-4 yards, and he's trying to go for the big play, and it causes him to lose yardage. The other is that, I guess it's kind of a twofold, that he goes for the home run every time. I don't think that he goes for the home run every time, though he does hit the home run a whole lot. I mean, he's the Aaron Judge of running back prospects. He's going to get the long ball a lot. The other thing that people say about him is that, you know, how can you draft a running back top 10 that had under 100 yards against Michigan and Ohio State? If you go back and watch those games, though, their defenders in the backfield, I counted 7 different plays against Ohio State where he's handed the ball and there's already someone in the backfield. So I think part of what happened is that he played behind such a bad offensive line that he started to try to do too much on occasion. Now, this is not something that really concerns me. You mentioned something about Adrian Peterson. I'm 28 years old. I've been evaluating prospects for about 5 to 6 years now in depth. I obviously watched Adrian Peterson. I watched him at Oklahoma, but I wasn't evaluating prospects at that time. Saquon Barkley is hands down the best running back prospect I've ever seen, and I don't think it's very close.
I think he's one of the most well-rounded running backs I've watched. And I haven't been into the draft that long. I've been following football, obviously, a lot longer. But when watching him, he's a big back. Like, you wouldn't expect a guy that's 5'11", 230 pounds to be able to catch a ball out of the backfield, to be able to hop over guys like he does, to be able to run a 4.3 40 like he's expected to do. There's a lot of things that around this guy that you love. I mean, you think of David Johnson, you know, that big running back that can handle a workload and can stand on the field for basically every single down. Barkley is that guy, and that's where, you know, people are looking at the blueprint that, you know, the Cowboys did with Ezekiel Elliott, you know, the Jags did with Leonard Fournette. The only thing is that people seem to miss Ezekiel Elliott when he went to the Cowboys. You know, let's talk about 2016. That defense played out of their mind. Like, they played over the level that they probably should have. That's why they were a playoff team. It wasn't necessarily I'm not saying Elliott wasn't a contributing factor, but he was. But then you go to the Jags this year and people are like, wow, Leonard Fournette, another playoff team. Like, what the common denominator is the running back. Leonard Fournette, as much as I love Leonard Fournette, the running back, and I do love him, he's not the reason they made the playoffs. He's not the reason they made it to the conference finals. You know, he struggled as the year went on. That offensive line is poor, but it's the defense that makes it really good. So there's arguments to be made. Should Barkley be a top 10 pick? Shouldn't he be? The fact of the matter is he's going to be. He's going to be taken. I think that the landing spots we're hearing right now that the Browns would be really interested at 4. We're hearing that the Colts could be interested at 3, but I think there's way too many holes in that team for them to even consider a running back. The Browns have actually been building some talent. And then, you know, you go down the list and you might get to the Bucks, the 49ers or the Raiders. Those are the teams in the top 10 I think we could see taking a chance on Barkley. But he's obviously the top guy. But the next one is there's like a top two tier here. I'm pretty sure. And I mean, I might be wrong. We haven't talked before we got on the air. But is your next prospect Darius Geis?
It is. Can I just add one more thing about Saquon Barkley real quickly?
Yeah.
So I think the thing that separates him from Elliott and Fournette, and I agree with you completely that Elliott and Fournette are not the reason those teams made the playoffs. What separates him is his ability as a receiver to kind of split out wide, to play out of the slot, to break linebackers down in space and really kind of transform an offense. I think he has the kind of impact that Todd Gurley had this year with those big receiving games. And the reason I get so excited about him is because of that mismatch, he creates problems for defenses all over the field. And you mentioned the Buccaneers, and I think that would be a perfect landing spot for him because you could run 12 personnel, which is one running back and two tight ends with two receivers. So you'd have O.J. Howard, Cameron Brate, Mike Evans, and DeShaun Jackson with Saquon Barkley out there. And you would literally have a situation where the defense wouldn't be able to match up because if they put three linebackers out there, okay, we got Brate and Barkley in the slot, and now you're dead. Okay, yes. So we're gonna put corners out there. Okay, now we're going to run it right down your throat with Saquon Barkley. Like, you would create so many mismatches on the defense that's why I think he's worth a top 10 pick. I agree with you in a vacuum that I wouldn't take a running back top 10. I just think that Barkley is not... That's what makes him different than the next guy we're about to discuss with Darius Geis, is that he's not just a running back. Like, I think he really is that true offensive weapon game changer that completely changes the whole dynamic of your offense.
In the question then, Elliot, let's ask this question. If David Johnson were in this draft right now and people know what they know about him, where would David Johnson go?
I would rank him behind Saquon Barkley. There's not a running back in the NFL I wouldn't trade for Saquon Barkley.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So, like, think about that. Like, NFL teams, I want to know if he was in this draft, if David Johnson was here, would he be drafted in front of some of these quarterbacks? Would he be drafted in front of, you know, Vita Vea, Marcus Davenport? Like, I think David Johnson would be a top 10 pick knowing what NFL teams know about him.
Yeah, so imagine if David Johnson was 21 years old and a better
exactly,
athlete.
Exactly, and he's only 21.
That's the talk this week, is that Barkley's not going to go top 10. And I'm like, I will take your action, sir. If you would like to put money on that, I will take your money.
And oddly enough, today is Saquon Barkley's birthday as we're recording this. So happy birthday, Saquon Barkley. If you're out there listening, give us a call on the show. We'd love to talk to you. But let's move on to Geis. He's another big guy. He's 5'11", 212 pounds. He can run someone over if he wants to, but he can also make some guys miss. He's not like the most laterally, you know, he's not a specimen like that. He's not like a Ronald Jones, who we're going to talk about in a minute, but he has some agility to him. He's a good athlete. Did have some knee injury that lingered in 2017. I don't think it's considered to be a long, like, lingering issue. What's your take on Geis?
So with Geis, he's a tone-setting running back, and I know that's kind of a scout term, but you know, he's kind of got that Marshawn Lynch impact on an offense where he's going to run through people and fire up and set momentum for your team, which is something that teams look for out of a running back. You mentioned his injury. His coach said basically throw out the 2017 tape, 2016 is who he is. And as a pure running back, excluding the receiving ability, he's right there with Barkley in 2016. Now, 2017, he was hampered by nagging injuries. There are two ways to look at it. One is, you know, he's injury prone and he's going to be banged up a lot with his running style. The other positive spin on it is that he still performed at a high level through all those injuries. So if I get a guy when healthy is otherworldly and when banged up is still really good, I think that's something to really look at, and it's going to be why he kind of goes at the end of the first, early second round. He needs to develop as a receiver. Kind of right now he's more of a dump off receiver. He's not going to be a guy you can have run routes against linebackers and win those one-on-one matchups consistently. He has the athleticism to be able to do that. I think the thing that makes him different than most violent runners in the past is that his elusiveness and his lateral quickness is much better than most of those guys. And the other thing is, you know, whenever we talk about a guy who's a violent runner, we always talk about, is he a first and second down back, or is he a three down back? And that's huge for fantasy, right? Especially with everything being PPR, that a guy like Jordan Howard may put up really good NFL numbers, but he's less attractive to people because he's not going to catch a whole lot of passes. So the other aspect of that is, are they good pass blockers? Because that's what NFL teams care about, even more than receiving ability to start, because they want to make sure they can keep him on the field. Geis has that ability. He needs to have the want to. You know what I mean? Like, some plays you watch him, and you're like, do that. And then other plays, you're like, bro, please try. Like, and it's maddening, but because it's there. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's got all the ability you look for. He just needs to develop that third down role in his game. And that's really what's going to determine whether or not he becomes a superstar NFL fantasy back, or whether or not he's this 12 to 1400 yard a year guy with 10 touchdowns, but you know, 20 catches, and kind of loses some fantasy value in that aspect.
Yeah, and it's funny that you say that, and that's the reason I have him going in the second round. I just feel like his pass blocking isn't quite there yet, and it's really odd because what I've noticed in his pass blocking is that he lowers his head on some blocking assignments and almost misses the target. He'll miss the pass rusher completely sometimes just because he lowers his head, which is really confusing because he's the type of guy when he's in the open field against someone, he's not afraid to run them over, and like, he has confidence. So I think you're right in the fact that he can do that. It might just take him some time, and that's where it comes in. You know, I do want to make it a point, and this is not applied just to the running back position, but this is applied to all positions. I wanted to make it a point in this podcast that as we go through the positions here and what it means for fantasy football, all these players are very, very talented. Obviously, they wouldn't be in the draft. They wouldn't be taken in the first and second rounds if, you know, they weren't extremely talented. Situation is going to mean a lot. Running back is probably the one that means the least because, you know, we know if they get volume, they're going to be worth something in fantasy. So if he falls in a situation where he's immediately jumps to the top of the depth chart, they're going to try and find a reason to keep him on the field in third down. So you better believe they're going to be working with him through the offseason. Geis, I have no issues with. I think it's an interesting term. I think I like what you said about the tone setter, because he is a guy that can carry the ball 20 times a game. He didn't do too much as a receiver at LSU, but it's not to say that he can't, because I think that he showed competence there, and I do think that he's good enough. I think we even saw it Leonard Fournette this year. He's good enough. You know what I mean? Like, if you can catch passes and not drop everyone that comes your way like Jordan Howard does, I think you can stay on the field as long as you can pass block. So Geis is a very interesting one. He's also my number two.
Yeah, I think one thing that's really important whenever you evaluate a prospect or you watch some of these guys is, just because you haven't seen someone do it doesn't necessarily mean that they can't do it. And Geis's combine and offseason process is going to play a big role, and to show teams, you know, have I developed as a route runner? And if he shows teams that, he could kind of jump into the end of the first round conversation there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the thing. That's where the combine's nice, because you could see them side by side with some other players that may have been involved in the passing game more. And then when you see them without pads on, you just see their hands, you see their footwork, and you see, like, there's some players we're going to talk about soon that, you know, we'll get into that. But that's why the combine is so big for me. Not so much the measurables, because those are, I think they're overstated sometimes, but there's other things that I'll watch during the combine, and we'll talk about that as we get further into the offseason. But after those big two, this is where heavy opinions come into play. Two of my favorite running backs to watch in this draft class are next, and I really can't decide which one I want higher. It's between USC's Ronald Jones and Georgia's Sony Michel. Some believe that these two running backs are too small and best suited for a timeshare, but before giving my thoughts, I'd love to hear your take on these two running backs.
So yeah, with Sonny Michel to start off, I disagree that he's too small. I think that there are times at the line of scrimmage that he can go down with first contact too easily. His whole game is getting to his second gear, and he gets to his second gear really quickly. So once he gets 2-3 yards, he's going to be able to run by people through contact, show great balance. He has good pad level. He's going to be able to meet people in the second, third level, like linebackers and safeties in the hole, and run through them and by them. There are issues right at the line of scrimmage, and he did run behind one of the best offensive lines in the country, and I think that's a huge aspect whenever you evaluate these guys. Is some of these big runs that become highlight runs, these guys just have, they could drive a car through it and there's no one in sight. He definitely has some of those runs, but he also has runs where he's running through and by people. He's got great vision, especially in the open field. He's great anticipation. He can see when holes are opening up. He's got great cutback ability. He reminds me of Dalvin Cook as a runner, because I don't know if he's necessarily going to test the best with agility, but his agility is good enough that it sets up his speed to blow by people. The thing that I think sets Sonny Michel apart from this next tier is his pass blocking is special. We talked about that earlier, where getting them on the field on third down, and this is why I think he can be a 3-down back, is because he's excellent. He's got great vision. He's got great understanding of who to take on. I think we talked about on Twitter the other day, Mike, about how De'Aaron Payne is this physical specimen and this great player at Alabama. And there was a play where he became a free rusher, and Michel took him on heads up and kind of stonewalled him. And that's something you don't see. And two plays earlier, he picked up Minkah Fitzpatrick, who's considered the best, you know, secondary blitzer in the country. There's a play against Notre Dame where the corner is blitzing off the edge and he finishes a block. You never see running backs kind of take a guy to the ground and absolutely demolish him. And that's what he does consistently. Now, as a receiver, he didn't do much this past year. He did catch 20 plus passes the two previous years. I think right now he's kind of in the flats guy, but he shows the ability and has, you know, the physical tool set to develop as a route runner and become more of a weapon. So I think Michel, it has the opportunity to be really big time. So my comparison for him is Dalvin Cook with pass blocking ability. If you guys remember last year, that was a huge concern with Cook in terms of whether or not he could stay on the field on third down. With Ronald Jones, I think there's a lot to like about Ronald Jones, and I think there's reasons to have concern. So like I mentioned with Michelle, I think Jones has the tools to be a great receiver. I think right now he's not there yet. So when I watch Ronald Jones, I think there's a lot of projection. He's got awesome open field speed. I mean, the constant comparison for him is Jamaal Charles. I think that's in part because he has dreads and wears 25 and he's fast, and that's just what people see. It's very easy to make that comparison. I don't think he's quite at that level. I think he goes down too easily on first contact. The thing I love about him is he's a runner that's kind of see hole, hit hole. You know what I mean? Like if you give him a sliver of an opening, he's going to hit it and get to the next level. I found it really interesting watching his film against different teams. So against Western Michigan, he looked like an otherworldly prospect. He was just better than everybody else. Against some of the better teams, he looked like a good player that wasn't quite living up to the hype. So I still want to go back. I've done 4 of his games. I think I'm going to do every one of his, because I don't want to miss on him, because I know a lot of people are really smart and really like him. And I think there are legitimate concerns.
Yeah. So Jones, it's funny you mentioned that about the games, because I think I know what games you're talking about. Notre Dame and Texas. Those are the games that I noted I put in my notes, and I went back and I watched them again, because Ronald Jones, he pops so much. Like, he was actually my favorite running back to watch going through all the running backs in this draft class, because he's got that quick twitch ability. And, you know, people are saying Jamaal Charles, but it's funny. Last year, I compared Alvin Kamara in the draft process to Jamaal Charles. And now Ronald Jones is more like Alvin Kamara than he is Jamaal Charles to me. They kind of have that speed that it's like, it's a very sneaky speed. They don't look like they're running like a crazy mile an hour, but they are. They move. They're not an easy target to hit. They almost never get hit like really hard. And when you look at Notre Dame in the Texas game, their offensive line was getting blown up. It seemed like he was getting everything he could in those games. He's a running back that seems to me like he knows when to put his head down. Like in the goal line situations, they gave him goal line carries and he succeeded in there. He did really well. He scored 31 rushing touchdowns over the last 2 seasons. Obviously, I think he benefited from playing with Sam Darnold. That's going to lighten the boxes a little bit when you play, you know, alongside of a quarterback that's projected to go in the top 5. But he does remind me of that mold of that Alvin Kamara-esque running back. So The only concern, I was watching with a friend the other day, and he was saying that he's a little upright. You know, when he goes in and he's running through the box, you could see him a little upright, where we'd like to see him get his hips a little bit lower to the ground. I think that's like something that can be taught, though, at the pro level, like almost like get those pad levels down. I don't think Frank Gore came into the league with the pad levels as low as they are now. So it's something that can be refined, but I think the natural talent is there with him. As for Michelle, man, he's another fun one. My comparison to him is LeSean McCoy. I think that he has like that kind of, he's got a good first step. He gets up to speed quickly. He's a true three down back. You said it, very, very good in pass protection. He can be a bit jumpy at times, but that could be a good and bad thing, because when people look at that and they're like, you know, he's going to get smashed in the NFL. Look at Le'Veon Bell. If you were to look at Le'Veon Bell and then to go stick him behind, you know, the Broncos offensive line, Le'Veon Bell wouldn't be the same running back that people think he is. The thing is he plays behind a very, very good Pittsburgh offensive line, and it gives them the ability to show that patience and then hit the hole when they finally open it. Michelle kind of reminds me of that, where it's like if he falls into a team with a good offensive line, I think he's going to be really freaking good. Like LeSean McCoy with the Bills, you go back to 2016, where he averaged over 5 yards per carry, looked like he found the fountain of youth. That offensive line was so good. When you give a guy like Michelle space, bad things are going to happen to that defense. So he shared work with Chubb, obviously, there in Georgia. So I think that people are thinking his ceiling's a little bit limited, but I'm not one of them. I have him and Jones right next to each other. I can't decide which one I like more, but know that these two running backs are extremely fun to watch. And if you're like looking for the highlight running backs, Ronald Jones and Sony Michel are awesome. All right. So the next one, this one's like this, you either love him or hate him. And again, we haven't talked, so I have no idea where you're at on Royce Freeman. He's not the three down running back like those that we've talked about to this point. This is the point where landing spot comes into play, I think, from a fantasy perspective. Freeman is a downhill one cut runner who doesn't offer anything laterally. I mean, not much at all. He doesn't waste time behind the line of scrimmage. He follows his blocks really well. He's one of the more consistent runners in this draft, though he may not have, you know, that burst that some do to, you know, hit that 80 yard home run. He doesn't have that long speed. A comparison for him, like there's a lot of people out there that maybe never watch these players, and he's a player that reminds me a little bit of like a Jordan Howard. He's a better receiver than Jordan Howard, but at the same time, it's just like that no nonsense runner. He follows his blocks. He's not going to do anything flashy, but he's going to get you yards. That's where I'm at with Freeman. Where are you at with Royce Freeman right now?
So with Freeman, I think the interesting thing about him is that mentally he's incredibly good. You mentioned he follows his block. Like, his vision is elite. He's constantly setting up linebackers and players in the secondary, and he understands defensive leverage and how he can move subtly and kind of get a defender out of position and then make a big run. My issue with him is all the stuff you said. Athletically, he's very limited. He doesn't have top-end speed. He doesn't have great power either. He doesn't have great balance. He's not going to make many people miss. He can catch the ball, but he's not exactly going to be lighting people up in space. I really think he's the kind of guy, I have a fifth round grade on him, so I'm going to probably be lower on him than most. I think he's the kind of guy that if you feel very good about your offensive line and you don't necessarily value the running back position, you throw in there and he's going to get every yard that your offensive line blocks, but not a whole lot more than that. So that's kind of what I think of. So kind of to give it perspective, I view him as Matt Forte with the vision, but you take away all of Matt Forte's other abilities.
That's not ideal.
No, it's not ideal. But like my basic point is that, for example, with the Dallas Cowboys, right? This is where I would like to see him go, Dallas, where if Zeke gets suspended or misses time, Freeman can step in there and he can make sure that every single situation he's going to get the exact number of yards that your offensive lineman blocks for. And he's going to pop a run every once in a while because he's not, you know, he's not running a five. He's smart and understands leverage, like I talked about. His vision is spectacular. It's up there with anyone in the classes when I study it. I really think that he's going to be a product of his offensive line, and you draft him because he's not going to hurt you, but he's also not necessarily going to help you.
Yes. Yes. And that's why I was saying right when I introduced him is that I think it comes down to landing spot, but he is a name that I think you should know. And it's funny you mentioned fifth round, because I'm almost positive that's where Jordan Howard was picked. Cause I think there were some knocks on him like that. And that's the thing is like Jordan Howard, he's not a big tackle breaker. He doesn't have crazy speed, but he's a very smart guy, and he knows how to follow his blocks. And that's, it's so funny because like the more I watched of him, the more he reminded me of someone like Jordan Howard. So, but speaking of Alfred Morris, like, I love that you brought him up, because the next, and I know that some people are going to hate me on this, because there's a lot of people that have liked this running back for quite some time. He's come back from a bad knee injury. And that's the thing. Alfred Morris was not, he's not a bad running back. Like, if you go back to his early days in Washington, he was actually really good. So it's not to say that this particular player can't be very productive from a fantasy standpoint, but Nick Chubb, I think you're a fan of him, because I want to say that I've seen on Twitter, I think I've heard, seen you saying some things about him. So he's obviously got great size, 5'10", 220. He's a bigger back. He's a power back. He doesn't have the quick twitch moves, but he does have good speed for his size. He's got decent lateral ability, again, for a bigger guy. It's not enough to beat most defenders to the edge, though, I don't think, on the NFL level. That major knee injury in 2015, obviously coming back from that, was huge. He scored multiple touchdowns in 6 of 15 games in 2017. He did struggle in the national championship against Alabama. I know a lot of people do, but he doesn't catch. He's not a natural hands catcher. Like Sony Michel, I think that you could actually see some traits in him where he could be a hands catcher, where Chubb's really not that guy. I just don't know what I see from Nick Chubb on this level. You know what I mean? Like, it's like Royce Freeman. I don't think he has his vision, but I don't know if Nick Chubb has enough athletically to beat the players in the NFL where he succeeded in college.
You mentioned his injury, because it's him freshman year was incredible. And I think he's regained a lot of that stuff, but he has not regained all of his lateral quickness. And people are point to his long speed, because he does have that. Like, once he builds up his speed, he's fast, but he's not necessarily explosive. What I really like about Nick Chubb is I think he's one of the safest prospects in the draft, in terms of, I know exactly what I'm going to get, and he's going to be really good in between the tackles. I think he understands what blocks are opening up for him. I think he's got really good power. Like, he can lower his shoulder and run through people, break tackles, get into that second level. And then that's kind of, he's going to break one every once in a while. He reminds me of like a Jonathan Stewart. He's kind of low, compact to the ground, power runner, brings an aspect to an offense. Like you said, I don't think he is going to be a three down back. The reason I like him is because I know exactly what I'm going to get out of the first two downs. You know, he only ran 53 routes last year. He caught 4 passes. Like, that's not an aspect of his game at all right now. I just think that between the tackles, he's going to get everything that's blocked. He can finish runs. He can be powerful. I think he can be a great red zone guy. I have a third round grade on him right now. That's kind of where I would feel comfortable taking him, maybe at the end of the second round. A team I would like to see him go to is the Cleveland Browns, because their offensive line is pretty good, and I think he would match up incredibly well with Duke Johnson, who could bring that third down element, and he could be what everyone wanted Isaiah Crowell to be.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, and I'll be happy to see that offensive line maybe come together, get Joe Thomas back. It'll be nice to see. I would love to see a running back there. That's why Barkley, I understand why the Browns want to do it. I just don't know at 4 if I could do it. There's just so much talent there in the draft. But yeah, that's honestly, I think we feel similarly, and that's the thing, is that's why I said Alfred Morris. Alfred Morris, he was a really consistent running back on first and second down. You didn't really want him on the field and third down because he wasn't a hands guy. And that's the thing, is like Alfred Morris, to go back to what, 2013, like, he was a really good running back for the Redskins. So I don't think it's necessarily a knock. It's just more of like situational, like, where is he going
to
go?
Yeah. And I think anything with player comparisons, you have to understand that when people make them, they're talking more about traits as opposed to career projections.
Yes.
So like what you're saying is, I don't trust him on third downs. I think he's a powerful guy that's in between the tackles, that's going to break some big runs. He's going to have some highlight plays. You're going to say every once in a while that, you know, I think he's fantastic. But that's kind of what he is, you know, and that's fine. The question is how much you value that, right? So that's what it comes down to with Nick Chubb. I think I've seen people in fantasy talk about, like, he's the third overall pick in Dynasty, and I think that's too high. I really do. I think that Chubb is a guy that's going to grind in between the tackles, make a lot of plays, get everything that's blocked. You know, he's going to be a great guy to come in on like 3rd and 3 situations. You can hand him the ball and he's going to get first downs. He's kind of like an old school football player that would be much more valued, you know, 15 years ago than he is today.
I love how you said that, the traits instead of the actual projection. And that goes back to the whole idea that, you know, just because a player is talented doesn't mean you're always going to see that talent come out. Like me, I'm one to think that Amir Abdullah, if he was on a different team, I think he'd be more successful on a team that had an offensive line. He's a very patient runner. He's always looking for that crackback, and he's trying to get in these holes, and the Lions just haven't created them for him. Jerick McKinnon had this problem before this season. It was funny. In 2016, I legitimately watched in front front of my eyes Jerick McKinnon become a different running back. When he started the year, he was dancing. He was doing everything that Amir Abdullah does, but he didn't have the offensive line to do it. He was just too patient, and it didn't work. As the year went on, you just started seeing him getting downhill so much faster. He became, obviously, he was getting used more in the receiving game. And then this year, the Vikings offensive line obviously played a ton better, and we saw Jerick McKinnon flourish. And now he's going to get a bigger contract. So that's the thing, is if Jerick McKinnon didn't learn, if the Vikings offensive line didn't get better this offseason, we may have never seen the player that Jerick McKinnon became in 2017. And that's why I think that's so important that you say the traits. It's not so much our projection. I don't think Nick Chubb's going to automatically be Alfred Morris. He could be better. He could be worse. It all comes down. Coaching means so much in the NFL. Landing spot means so much. So let's shift over to another three down back, Auburn's Kerryon Johnson. You mentioned earlier about Matt Forte. When I watch Johnson, he reminds me a little of Matt Forte. He's a little lanky. But Forte was that way too, and he almost looked awkward carrying the ball. Forte was never an elite runner, but Johnson kind of does everything well. He's got great size. Is there anything that pops with him for you? Do you think that he could be a potential three down back in the NFL?
I do. I think with Johnson, it's one of those things where he does nothing great, but he does a whole lot of things well. I think he's a very patient runner, and you see Auburn do this all the time. They ran a ton of wildcat, so he could really watch all of his blocks develop and get yardage there. He's got good strength. And I think one of the things that was really interesting when watching Johnson was he was nicked up the entire year, basically. He started the year with a hamstring injury, and then he finished the year with an ankle injury. He played most of it. You saw, I think it was a game against Mississippi State, he broke through the line of scrimmage, and he ended up getting caught from behind when he had like 10 yards on the guy because he couldn't finish the run. And if you just saw that play, you're like, wow, this guy's slow. But that's not necessarily what it is. So I think it's really interesting with Johnson that when he's healthy, he can be really good and he does everything well. So that your Forte comparison makes a whole lot of sense because that's kind of what Forte was. And that kind of created a Pro Bowler, right? He's almost like the Draymond Green of running backs where there's not necessarily anything that's going to be great. You know, he's not going to score 20 points a game, but he's going to be hover right around that triple-double all the time. And that's kind of what Johnson is. I mean, he's going to do a whole lot of things well. I think the thing he might be best at, he catches the ball very well. He looks natural catching the ball and turning upfield and making plays. And to have a bigger back who can run with strength that can catch the football is a bit of a rare commodity.
Absolutely. No, I think you guys, you and I are lockstep on him. Don't need to hit on him too much more. I want to hit on a few more players before we run out of time here. San Diego State's Rashad Penny, another decent sized back, 5'11", 220. I think he's a capable running back that has a very workmanlike approach. Nothing flashy, but he seems to be someone who can fill a heavy carry role if needed. I don't think he's going to be drafted to be a starter anywhere, but I think he'll be an interesting guy in a depth chart where it's like, you know, like those guys that we watch that we keep on waiver wire speed dial, as our buddy Sigmund Bloom says all the time, where it's like if he falls behind like a Todd Gurley or something like that because they need some depth on that team, he's one of those guys that could step in and fill that role. I do think that he can total at least 20 carries. I think he did that in all but three games in 2017. So I like him. I mean, like I said, I don't think he's anything flashy. He's not someone that you're going to want to, I don't even think he's going to end up being drafted in your redraft fantasy leagues, but I think he's someone to keep on your radar.
Yeah, with Penny, it's interesting because a lot of people really like him. And when you watch him, I think the thing you need to realize is what your expectations are going in. So I think mine were a little high, and I want to go back and rewatch it and see, you know, with more realistic expectations what he is. But what I thought he was a two-down back. I thought he was an okay receiver who struggled with some of his routes. I thought he was a terrible blocker. So right away, he's a two-down guy that's going to be going in the probably third, fourth, fifth round. So that makes him a less attractive fantasy player. He does have good vision. He's got real good cutback vision, which is good. He also will kind of run into his own offensive lineman at times. And, you know, the game against Stanford, he looked good, not great. The game against New Mexico, where none of those guys are NFL players, he looked like a grown man. So that's the other thing whenever you evaluate someone is you want to keep in mind who they're playing against. I think Penny is kind of exactly what you said he is. I think he's okay to good at a whole lot of things, and not a third down guy. So that typically doesn't translate into, you know, star NFL player.
For sure. I mean, it's kind of weird. It's always fun when you argue with people on the podcast, but it's also nice when you sit there and you've been watching the same thing as the other person, you kind of see the same thing. So running backs, it's a little easier, I would think, than most. I think when you get to wide receivers, tight ends, it gets a little bit more tricky. But let's talk about some big name running backs who I believe are going to be overdrafted just because of where they come from. And I'm talking about Bo Scarborough from Alabama and Josh Adams from Notre Dame. I do not see anything special from these two. Some are going to look at Scarborough and think that, yeah, Alabama running back. Yes. You know, Adams, my notes on him, these are legitimately my first few sentences that I had written down for him. Lacks initial burst, slow to react to the line of scrimmage. I legitimately feel like I'm watching him in slow motion. He does look better in some games than others, but he's really inconsistent. He was playing behind two of the best offensive linemen, if not the two best offensive linemen in this entire draft, McGlinchey and Nelson. So am I missing anything here? Like, do you like Scarborough or Adams at all?
So I like Scarborough coming into the year, but he really didn't take that next step. It's interesting because if you watch his 2016 film, especially down the stretch, you know, where he was kind of the catalyst for the Alabama offense, where he led them to the national title game. He got hurt against Clemson. He looked like a grown man going up against little boys against Washington. And this year, he kind of took a step back. I think the thing that's interesting is that he is a big, powerful guy, you know, that can run through people, be an in-between-the-tackles guy. I think his ceiling right now is kind of a LeGarrette Blount kind of role. Go at the end of the draft, be a first and second down power back. The thing that's interesting is he was the second leading receiver at Alabama. But I think that talks more about Alabama's offense and quarterback play than it does Bo Scarborough. With Josh Adams, man, we're on the same page. Like, I watched, because people were talking about him in the second round earlier in the year, because I think he's got a lot of highlight reel runs. I mean, he's got one, like, 70-yarder against USC, and the C's just part, and he just goes. That's terrific, but that's not necessarily what I'm looking for. I was watching it, and I was like, I don't get it. I don't think his vision's anything special. I don't think he's elusive. I don't think he's got great top-end speed. He didn't look good running routes. He looked okay catching the football. Like, the old saying is he's just a jag, right? Just another guy that ran behind a good offensive line. I don't know if I'd even really want to draft Josh Adams.
I would hate it if my team drafted Josh Adams. Like, he's a plotter is what he is, and he's not going to work in today's NFL. I just don't see it. I don't. I mean, I could be wrong. He could be, you know, Jeremy Hill. Who knows? And he could have one good season. I don't know. But from what I've seen so far with Josh Adams, I don't like him. Scarborough, I feel like, and it's funny, LeGarrette Blount is a solid one to compare him to. And not to say that they can't have a role in the NFL, but it's just not someone that you're going to covet in fantasy unless they go to the Patriots or a team that's going to score tons of rushing touchdowns. So before we get out of here, let's hit on a few of the smaller backs in this draft class that could make some noise in PPR formats. Tennessee's John Kelly. His name has been hot as of late. A lot of people talking about him. So let's start there. He's 5'9", roughly 200 pounds. Do you think that he can be anything more than a third down back? I will say that when I watch him as a receiver, he's a fantastic receiver. Like, he really is. He has the little hop, and it's like a very subtle thing that Christian McCaffrey does, that when the ball's coming towards him, he does this little hop. And what it does, it suspends him in air, and it makes it so it's not so violent as your body's running down the field, that violent shake that you have. They float in the air, they catch the ball, and they come back down. John Kelly has that to his game. He's a very natural catching the ball. I do think he can mix in on first and second down, but I don't think he's going to be a three down back.
Okay, so I think we finally found our first disagreement. John Kelly is currently my fourth overall running back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he might be my draft crush. I don't think he's got the breakaway speed. I think what you said about his third down ability is 100% accurate. Like, he caught 37 passes this year, which is more than most running backs in this class. He's going to beat linebackers in space. I was going to say, like, it's his job, but it will be his job. But he's someone that gets me really excited because of his third down ability. And I think when we look at this class, and we mentioned Michelle and Jones and Barkley earlier, but there's not a ton of guys that are great receivers that I've gone through so far. So I think that that aspect of his game is great for his long-term success and great for his short-term success in terms of getting on the field right away. I think the thing that gets me most excited about him is his power. He broke 51 missed tackles last year, which is one in every four touches, which is not that far behind Kareem Hunt and Alvin Kamara's one in every three touches last year. His stiff arm is powerful. We talked about Geis before with the tone setter. Like, Kelly is a guy that will run through you and throw you aside and then let you know about it afterwards. He loves to chirp. You know, he's one of those guys is out there and really likes to talk. He's not necessarily, doesn't necessarily have the best lateral quickness. Like, his cuts aren't insane, but they are able to get the defender kind of off his base and not completely squared up. And then Kelly runs right through his contact. Like, he's a very strong runner. He does a good job pressing the line of scrimmage, which is where the runner kind of gets to the offensive line, sucks the defense in, and then he can bounce it out to the edge. He does a really good job doing that. I think he's got good cutback vision as well. He understands his linemen. I think when you add up the fact that he's kind of that short, compact back that breaks a lot of tackles, that can be a really good receiver. I think that's a player that's used more in today's NFL than a guy like Nick Chubb that we talked about earlier. I mean, he played on the same team last year, and I don't necessarily think he's as good as Alvin Kamara, but I think he could have a similar role where he's getting 12, 15, 17 touches, and a lot of them are going for really big plays, both in the receiving game and the run game.
Yeah, that's kind of how I view him, actually. I think that he's a timeshare running back and one that's going to have some fantasy value. Like I said, especially in PPR formats, a guy that can mix in on first and second down, but I don't see him being like a 20-touch back. Like, that's where I'm at with him. And yeah, he's 5'9", 205, so he is extremely compact. I thought he danced a little too much at the line of scrimmage. I almost never saw him run straight downhill, which is what sometimes you have to understand, like, that's what you have to do. It's almost like he's just looking for, you know, a hole that doesn't need to be there. Where it's like, I just want to see a running back sometimes not make the highlight reel thing, just run straight downhill. I thought I didn't see that all the time. He is someone, I will say, the first time I watched him, I was like, eh. Then the second time I watched him, I liked him a little bit more. I've done my first pass essentially with all the film, where it's like, you know, things are going to change as we go. Seeing him at the combine, because he did get an invite there, I'm going to be interested to see him there among the other running backs. But yeah, he's definitely someone that I have, you know, I like him more than Scarborough. I like him more than those guys. I don't know if I can move him into the conversation with like Kerryon Johnson or Sony Michel or Ronald Jones, but I think he's just outside that tier, but someone that can definitely contribute to an NFL team. So another small running back who I think has gone a bit under the radar. I just want to mention a few of these guys before we get out of here, because I think they're names to watch. Because I'd compare Ito Smith and John Kelly somewhat similarly. Ito is a little bit smaller. I don't think he's going to mix in on first and second down, but I think he's a fantastic receiver. He did not get an invite to the combine, which is very disappointing. I really wanted to see him mix in there because at Southern Miss, you know, I wanted to see him around these other guys. And one more I wanted to mention was Grambling State's Martez Carter. He's another smaller back, 5'9", 205 pounds, but excellent, excellent change of direction. Not afraid to lower his shoulder, try and run someone over. Solid initial burst, but he lacks long speed for a smaller back. These are players that, like, I just want to keep on our radars. We might see them move up, you know, draft boards as we get nearer to April. But I know, Elliot, did you want to touch on any other running backs while we had time here?
Yeah, one guy I'm a fan of is Kalen Ballage in terms of his ceiling. There's a lot of concerns with him, but at the same time, you know, he's a big physical back. He had 8 touchdowns in one game a couple years ago. He looked pretty good at the Senior Bowl. He needs to actually become a better power runner, as believe it or not. But what he is he's an elite receiver. You know, he came into the year as the second highest graded receiver by PFF, and you don't really get that at someone his size. So I think that his potential, you know, he's probably going to be like a 4th or 5th round pick. His potential to develop into a back that becomes really dangerous is awesome, because I think he can play receiver. I think he can be a mismatch out of the backfield, and he's going to be a major issue with his speed for linebackers and his size for defensive backs.
I love it. I while watching him, it seems like to me, though, like, I think he's got a little bit of a personality thing where he doesn't know the type of running back that he should be, which is like, I feel like he should be like a Leonard Fournette type running back, where it's like that one cut runner. He gets downhill. He's a massive man. He's going to be really hard for, as you mentioned, like a smaller linebacker to get in front of 6'3", 230 pounds. Good luck. I just feel like Ballage, he danced a little bit too much for a big back, because once he gets going, he is going to be extremely tough to slow down. So I understand where you're at with him. When watching him, I want to like him so much because he's like this physical specimen, right? He moves so much faster than he should for a guy that's 6'3", 230 pounds, you know, kind of like a Saquon Barkley, but I'm not getting into that comparison. But it was a blast having you on, Elliot. Hopefully, you know, our listeners, they have a good idea as to what to expect from some of these top prospects and what tiers they fall into. Is there anything that you wanted to promote before we get out of here?
Yeah, guys, you can follow me on Twitter at Elliot Crist, ELIOTCRIST. I like to do these prospect threads every day, one prospect a day, where I go in depth breaking down their film and what I think about a prospect. And then that night, I will do a podcast on them called Draft Daily Pod. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play right now. And I have one guest and we go in depth on a prospect and we discuss different traits, situations, player comparisons, and what we think about a prospect. Sometimes they're debates, sometimes we agree, but we try to get a deep dive and really tell you about the ins and outs of different prospects.
Absolutely. He's killing it on there, man. The threads on Twitter are quite fun because it's often hard to fit all your thoughts into that. So it's like I'm putting them into an article, but Elliot's creating a thread. Check him out on Twitter, guys. Coming up next week, we are going to be talking NFL draft wide receivers with Matt Waldman. So make sure to subscribe and get alerts for when the new episodes go live. And again, guys, go leave a review on iTunes. Send it into contest at Fantasy Pros. Get entered to win that signed Le'Veon Bell helmet. As always, don't forget to follow myself on Twitter at Mike Tagliere NFL. And as Elliot mentioned, he is at Elliot Crist, which is ELIOTCRIST. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, lights out. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge Podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.